boys.
Blog Talk
good,
Radio.
Everybody. What's good, everybody? Lean Keys, Real Talk here, back with another episode. We're here, Lee's here. My bad, I was a few seconds late right there, but, you know, just running around crazy. I'm a last-minute kind of guy, last-minute man for pretty much everything. I should probably change that since I'm moving into the professional world, but it is what it is. I'm a student of life, so anyways, we're working on it, and we better break down tonight, roll into some of these next couple fights, next couple events. I'm extremely excited for UFC Sunrise this weekend. I'm a little bit stressed because, you know, my homies want to go do some other stuff on Saturday night, and they're trying to bait me into go doing, you know, some other activities, some other festivities. So to go do some other things, I might not be able to even watch the event. So I don't know. I'm feeling some type of way about that because if I don't get to see the event, I'm going to miss my boy Mike Perry fight. And I'm going to also miss John Lineker and Corey Sandhagen. Damn. Tongue twister. Corey Sandhagen fight. And I'm going to miss Jacare fight. And I'm going to miss there's many fights. So, yeah, we here. Lee, what's good, bro?
Yo, what up, man? What's going on?
How you feel about that, bro? My homies are trying to bait me into go doing some other stuff on Saturday night, which means I'll have to miss out on UFC. How you feel about that?
Well, you young man, go hang out, and you can always have a fight on your phone.
That's true. That's true. Just something about watching it live is just a different effect. I know I could watch the fights back on ESPN Plus or something like that.
Well, you know, the thing is though, it's a fight night card, so you can always get up Sunday and watch the replay, or you could do like I do when I'm not watching the fight. What I do is I check my phone every, you know, maybe every 5 minutes or every 10 minutes to see what the Twitter world is talking about, or I just go to ESPN and get the updated match results.
Yeah, it's looking like that. That might be what I'm going to have to do because I haven't seen some of my homies in a while. So one of my boys got to, we live up in Massachusetts, but one of my homies' girlfriend lives out in New York. So he's always going out there all the time to go see his girl. So he's usually out in New York and he's finally back out here and they want to go do something. So it is pretty tempting. What was that you said? My bad. I didn't mean to cut you off.
I was like, this card is pretty stacked. I mean, you know,
it is pretty stacked, man.
Oliveira, Mike Perry fight. I'm liking the Lineker, Sandhagen fight, which I'm writing an article about, finishing up tomorrow. You got the Sousa Hermanson fight. I really don't care about the Greg Hardy fight. You got Glover Teixeira fighting on that card. So it's an okay card, you know, for it to be a fight night.
Actually, you know, a guy on Twitter earlier speaking about that co-main event, that, you know, a guy on Twitter had tweeted this out earlier and I responded to it. I should have tagged you in it because what he said really made me laugh out loud, and it was such a great the way he put it together was so good. He was like, and it was simple. He just, you know, he proposed it to the Twitter world, and he said, "No, anybody else want to participate in a? I don't know if he's at worldwide. He might have said that. He was like, he basically said we should do a worldwide shutdown. You know, during the Greg Hardy fight. He's like, everybody, you know, don't be tuned in. Like, watch the whole event and then shut that thing off when the Greg Hardy fight comes on. Then you'll see the ratings really dip. Then they'll be like, damn, maybe he can't be the co-main event no more. He didn't say all that, but I like the idea, though.
So,
basically,
he's telling everybody to go black during the Hardy fight.
I encourage you to do that. He basically said, let's go blackout during the Greg Hardy fight to protest it. Protest it. That's kind of like a protest in a way.
Yep.
And,
yep. I think I'll disconnect my stream.
Protest, so.
Yep. I'm gonna disconnect my stream once I think Mike Perry fights before his fight. Yeah, I think I'm gonna disconnect my stream once the Perry and Oliveira fight. Once they had a post fight in ring interview, I'll go black. I'll support that.
And you know, that's one thing. Now that I just remembered that he's that high up on the card. If I do miss the event, that will be the reason why I will be. That is the silver lining. If me to have missed the event, to not have to support him being in the co-main event for all the fight fans who are still going to watch his fight, because there are a lot of people, you know, you end up saying, like, you know, a lot of fans will complain, but, you know, you're still going to watch the fight. But for this case, I really have no interest in that fight. So that really wouldn't be the case for me, because I really just don't care about his MMA skills. He didn't even look good before in his other fight, and he threw an illegal knee. Yeah, I think it was an illegal knee, and then he said he didn't know the rules. So if you're going to be on the biggest platform, there's no excuse, and you should know the rules. So you already embarrassed yourself in front of everybody. So I think it's just a shame that they even put him back up on that pedestal again. So if there's any silver lining of me not watching the event, it's that I get to miss out on that fight, because I really couldn't care less about that one.
But the thing is, he hasn't done anything that deserves to get main event or co-main event booking. He hasn't done anything. Only thing he's done is won a couple fights on the Contender Series. We've seen a lot of people come from the Contender Series getting the big lights of the UFC and shrink. And you can say he basically shrunk in his first fight when he said he didn't know the rules. How you not know the rules? You trained. You know what I'm saying? You've been training. You've been in fights already. How you not know the rules? That's like a rookie mistake. That's just crazy to me, man. But, I'm going to look that tweet up.
The fact he actually decided to use that excuse, though, is the part that I can't respect about it. Like, it's like, if you would have, it's almost like if you were to take the fall for something, for one of your boys, or like somebody else who did something, but then you take the fall for it without like coming out and saying, oh, nah, like that person did it. You know what I mean? It's kind of like that, where, you know, it wasn't necessarily the right thing for you to, like, in a situation, you didn't need to take the fall for it, but you could just own up to it and accept it. Like, it is an L on your part. You still got to take the L, but it's an L you could just keep your mouth closed, and now you know. You don't need to tell us, you know what I'm saying? You don't need to give away that information. Tell us that you didn't know what you were doing. Now you just really look like even more of an amateur.
Yeah, man, because, you know, I think him being a fighter, you definitely got to take ownership for that, because you're the one in the octagon. And I think what he should have said, and I think if he would have said this after the fight, if he would have said, you know what, that was my bad, you know, I thought he was getting up, or I thought he was up or whatever, but, you know, I did hit him with an illegal knee, you know, I'll be better next time, you know, la, 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 you know, he apologized to the guy. I think that ingratiates you with the fans even more instead of what he said after the fight. Because after the fight, us as fans, we saying, damn, you don't know the rules, what you doing in the octagon? You can hurt somebody in there, you know what I'm saying? Because the thing is to go in there and beat your opponent, but at the same time, nobody wants to see somebody actually go in there with the intentions of actually hurting somebody or permanently injuring somebody, and he could have did that. So I think that was a PR nightmare for him, what he said. And I just think the UFC, I get it. He's a name. You know, he's a former NFL player, la, 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 la. You know, that's the only reason why he's a name. But he's not a name in the sport of mixed martial arts. So me personally, if he was on the prelims, I wouldn't be mad. But him being in the co-main event, I just don't like the optics of it. And what kind of message are you sending to your female fan base?
That's a fact. Well, that's the thing, too, because a lot of people said the same thing when they put him on the card with Rachel Ostovich. And
yep.
those two conflicting situations right there, it just kind of looked like there was just neglect, you know, in that booking. It just seemed like it really wasn't, you know, whoever had thought, wow, you know, the matchmakers thought, wow, we're going to, you know, have Rachel fight Paige VanZant. We're going to have Greg Hardy fight whoever the hell he fought on the same card. You know, it just looked like you were uninformed. You know what I mean? Like, if you were informed and still made those and then put them on the same card, it just really seems like neglect to me. You know what I mean? Like, how is that not neglectful of the conflicting situations? I don't really understand. And then it just kind of sends the message, like, we just don't give a shit. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we don't even cuss on our show, my bad, but it basically just says we don't care. That's what that message was already sent the first time he was booked.
And I think they put him on the card after her domestic abuse incident. It wasn't like if he was already booked on the card before her incident had happened, then basically you can't be mad. That's just like coincidence. But for them to put him on the card after her issue, that just made it worse, man. It was like you could push him back a card, you know, just get him off the same card as her. I mean, just for the optics part and just to show Rachel some respect, you know what I'm saying? Even though she ended up not fighting on that card anyway, but, you know, just to show her some respect and some support, you could have just, like, pushed her back a card or something.
Yeah, I think they easily could have changed the booking on that and moved Paige VanZant up a card and Paige VanZant Ostovich up a card, and that was an easy fix. But it just seemed like laziness in the matchmaking. You know, I guess who am I really to judge? Because I'm not in the business of it. But I know y'all got to make your money, and you know the premiere of the ESPN was supposed to be big, but it just seemed like a careless move. You know, regardless of the timing, it just careless.
Even though you got in the business, but you are a fan, and we are a fan, we the one that made the business a success or a failure. So, I think a lot of people maybe in the UFC community maybe didn't know the history of Greg Hardy, so it probably didn't bother them. But for the people that did, you could tell, like, on Twitter, I want to say on Instagram and stuff like that, a lot of people was like, they was really turned off by the UFC putting him on the same card as her, even though she ended up fighting one card later. So, I mean, but just for them just to do that after her incident, it just shows a lack of sensitivity and a lack of awareness.
Yeah, you know, that's a sad situation overall. You know, another thing that I wanted to pitch tonight that somebody had asked on Twitter earlier. You know, you can see a lot of these ideas kind of pop up from Twitter because, you know, I scroll Twitter quite a bit, and there's actually a lot of interesting and intriguing angles, created through questions that people come up with on the timeline that I just see. And I'm like, you know what, that's a really interesting talking point. I just want to bring that up, you know, and this one is, okay, so the UFC, you know, I've heard from multiple sources that the UFC has promised Jacare Souza a title shot. So if Jacare wins in the main event this weekend, the UFC has promised him the winner of Whittaker and Adesanya. And the reason is because I remember not that long ago when Jacare first come out with his own post, and he came out and said that if he doesn't get a title shot after this next win, then he's just going to retire. Yeah, he's just going to retire. So, which is understandable, because if you look at his last, like, if you look at, I'm actually going to pull up his record right now, but I know, like, the wins that he does have, and he lost to Whittaker, but that's really not saying nothing. Like, you know, Romero's only lost to Whittaker too, and he's those are two of the best guys probably the two best guys in the middleweight division both lost to Whittaker. That's really not saying much. You know, and that's not even to assume Jacare can even beat Whittaker if they rematch. I'd probably go with Whittaker, you know, but Jacare is this guy. I think this guy can beat anybody in the division right now. He can beat anybody, but it's just when you have a rematch where a guy already lost to the other guy the first time they fought, it's just hard for me to go with, you know, the guy who lost the first fight. You know, it's really hard because, you know, I've gone against the grain and made decisions like that before, and I always end up being wrong. So, you know, I wouldn't go with Jacare if he were to fight Whittaker, but, I mean, if you have Jacare and Adesanya, let's just say, you know, that would be a different dynamic, you know, for that, because Jacare is no slouch on the feet either. We saw that in his fight with Weidman. You know, he's just as dangerous with his ground game as he is with his striking game. And we saw that when he fought Tim Boach, you know, a while back. That was, you know, a little over 2 years ago at this point. I think, yeah, he wrapped up Tim Boach in a little over a minute. He locked in a Kimura on Tim Boach in a little over a minute. So I remember watching that fight, and I was just like, man, what the hell just happened? What just happened? Like, Jacare is fast. This guy can finish you fast in many ways. I mean, then he had, you know, then he had the fight with Derek Brunson, the rematch, and he knocked out Derek Brunson in the first round too. I'm pretty sure that was just a little over a minute it took him to knock out Derek Brunson. So, I mean, I honestly didn't see the Calvin Gastelum fight. I guess it was a split decision. I honestly didn't see the fight, so I'm not going to come out and say it was close, because if I didn't watch it, I can't be judging it if I didn't watch it. But, I mean, they're saying split decision. Did you see the Jacare Calvin Gastelum fight? That was last year?
I want to say I had it as a draw, because I thought one of the rounds you could have gave it to either guy. So I thought I had it as a draw, but I wasn't mad that they gave it to Gastelum, because he did land the most significant strikes. He did defend the takedown. If they would have ruled it as a draw, I wouldn't have been mad. But if they would have gave it to Jacare, I think I would have been mad, because I really didn't think he won the fight. But I thought he did enough not to lose the fight, you know what I'm saying. At the same time, if you look at his last four fights, he's been win-loss, win-loss. So is that grounds enough to grant him a title shot? Normally, no, because you want somebody to be on the winning streak. But if you look at the guys that are ranked above him, those are guys he will have to rematch to get a title shot. So my only problem with it is Poirier did the same thing. He was like, either release me if I don't get a title shot, or I'm going to retire if I don't get a title shot. And I think, you know, is that the way we're going now? If you don't get your way, that you want to be released, or you're going to retire? Is Jacare deserving? Yes. Depending on who wins. If Adesanya wins, he's deserving. If Whittaker wins, Whittaker already knocked you out. So I don't see him getting that rematch with Whittaker, man. I think if Adesanya loses, then you'll see Adesanya versus Jacare before he gets a title shot.
Yeah, because the thing is, it's like, it's hard to, I think it's hard for the organization to find interest in rematches when guys lose in certain fashion. So where Jacare was, you know, got knocked out by Whittaker, you know, it's hard to build up intrigue for a rematch, in the same way as, you know, one of our least favorite ones to talk about, but the same way that, you know, Daniel Cormier knocked out Stipe, it's hard for the organization to build up a rematch, even though, interesting that even just came to my mind, because
did you see at the most recent press conference that Dana White said that that was probably where it was going to be going next?
Yep, I saw that.
Yeah, he said at the press conference that that the DC and Brock Lesnar fight. Yeah, it's not likely going to happen anymore. And didn't he say that the next fight would probably be a DC and Stipe rematch?
Yep. He said basically he's waiting here for DC because DC had just got back in the gym, trying to see whether or not, you know, how he's feeling. And basically that the Brock Lesnar-DC fight was nowhere near close to materializing. And the fight they're looking at now is DC versus Stipe 2. So I think me and you, man, I swear, man, the UFC, man, they must really, I don't know how they must listen to our shows after we get off the air. Because I actually been saying that there's no way that this Lesnar fight is going to happen, being that he just got back in the USADA pool. There's no way, and he's not consistent with his turn-ins, so there's no way that fight was going to happen by the summer. The only way that fight was going to happen by the summer is if he was doing everything he was supposed to do to, you know, to get straight with USADA.
Yeah. Like I said before, the UFC kind of, you know, really owes us a cut, man. You know, we need a piece of the pie, or we at least need a shout out at the next press conference. You know, they got that guy Schmo over there, you know, making noise at the press conference because he asked about a 165 pound division, and I think that we easily bringing in way more ideas than the Schmo. And we're bringing in ideas that and concepts that actually materialize. This guy is talking about 165 division that most likely ain't never going to happen. And he's gotten
and
viral.
He keeps bringing
that.
It.
What?
That's like his main platform is that 165 division. It's like, bro, man, it's 5 pounds difference between 170. It's a 10-pound difference between 155. Basically, to do 165, that means you will have to fold a 170. You'll have to go 155, 165, 175, 185. Too much, man. It's 5 pounds. Make 170. Shit, it's 5 pounds.
Yeah, and I don't understand because the point that I always make when this topic comes up is if you're going to make a 165 division, I understand that a lot of fighters would put their name in the hat. That's one of the things that the Schmo said. The Schmo said to Dana White, a lot of your fighters would put their name in the hat. Okay, cool. But when all their fighters put the name in the hat, you're talking about all the 155ers and a lot of 170 who went up to 170 but are too, you know, aren't fit for 155 like Pettis and RDA aren't really fit for 155, so they moved up to 170, but they still feel like they're too small for 170. But and that might sound good right there, but what happens when all those guys, pretty much all your best talent from both divisions, combines into a 165 division? What's the UFC supposed to do with 170 and 155? You're just going to empty out the two divisions into the 165, and then you're just going to, you know what I mean? Those are, like, pretty much the divisions in the UFC right now, the 155 and the 170. So I don't understand why they would think that they would want to dump all the talent from two different divisions, which are the biggest, I think, have the most talent and have the biggest buzz in the organization right now. And you're going to dump them both into one division, and then you're going to empty out both divisions. You're not going to have any fights to make. Who's going to be left if you're going to just allow fighters to make demands and create unnecessary divisions? You're losing all your talent. Does that not make sense?
And then it's just like the flyweight division when you got the 125ers going up to 135. The 155 guys, they're going to be small because when compared against guys that fought at 170 that's coming down maybe to 165, they're going to be small because that's another 10 pounds that, you know, they fighting with or whatever. So I mean, I know it's a pipe dream for everybody. I know Dana White is probably tired of fielding the question, but the only way you make it happen is you will have to fold to 170. You'll have to have 185, 175, 165, 165. And I just think between 165 and 175, that's 10 pounds. So basically, it's a 5-pound difference if you just keep the 170. So, I mean, he was real aggressive in his questioning, too. But, you know, man, I guess he's passionate about this 165. But I don't see it happening, especially if they plan on keeping the 170. I just don't see it happening.
And, you know, another thing, you know, unrelated to that, but another thing that, you know, a big conversation that I had sparked recently on Twitter was, you know, I was real vocal about this. So Macy Barber comes in, right? I think Macy Barber is a flyweight. Is Macy Barber a flyweight?
Is she at 125? Or, yeah, I think she's 125. I'll look it up, though. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to say she's 125 because I don't think she's at 135. And if she's calling out Paige VanZant used to be at 135. Wait. Nah, wait a second. Nah, I think I – nah, because you have straw weight at 115. So Paige VanZant was never at 135, I don't think. Because you have Waterson.
Nah, she used to fight at 125.
So now she's at – strawweight, 115. I think strawweight is 115 and flyweight is 125. Because the women gets me confused because you don't have a strawweight division in the men's division.
But go ahead with your point. I'm looking it up now.
Yeah, but what I just wanted to say about it was that, you know, Macy Barber comes in and, you know, she's a flyweight and she's, you know, been making a way for herself. You know, she's definitely a prospect. You know, she came in, she's undefeated. She racked up a couple wins in the UFC. I think she has two or three wins in the UFC now. And, you know, she's been real vocal. You know, I wouldn't say really, really vocal, but she's definitely been making her remarks to get, you know, eyes on her lately. I mean, one of the things that she said recently was that she thinks she'll be bigger than Conor McGregor and Ronda Rousey in the UFC, you know, in terms of being a star. And another thing that she said after that really caught headlines was recently, you know, just coming out and basically attacking Paige VanZant and saying that, claiming that she wants to fight Paige VanZant and that, like, I think she even said that the fight was offered to Paige VanZant and she didn't want to fight it, that she turned it down or something like that. I don't know if there was actually a contract. You know, that's the thing with these fighters. They always say that the fight was offered, but you never really know if there was ever even a contract sent over. You know, you never know if there was even ever a bout agreement that was ever even seen. So these fighters make a lot of claims like that. You never really know. But,
flyweight division.
I just said, yeah, the flyweights. I just think, look, Macy Barber didn't really look that good in her last fight. I mean, I'll admit to this. I'm a fan of hers, and you know, the couple of times she's fought in the UFC so far, you know, I knew who she was. I knew that she was going to be a prospect. Like, I bet on her, you know, in her last two fights. And I actually won money on her when her last fight when she fought J.J. Aldrich. And, you know, I remember when she was getting basically pieced up. That girl, Aldrich was giving her the hands. You know, Aldrich was really, it almost looked like Macy Barber was going to get stopped in the first round for a minute there. She was really getting boxed up on the feet. And then, you know, my boy was, you know, getting hyped thinking he was about to win some money off me. But I was like, bro, just wait. Like, Barbara's going to come back in the second round. She's going to knock her out. I'm telling y'all. You know, my boys were laughing at me. And what happened? Macy Barber come out in the second round, and she finished her. It wasn't like a straight one-punch hit or quitter knockout, but it was still a knockout. It was a TKO second round. I called it, and I won some money on it.
and I'm happy. But I just have to say that logic, you know, needs to be in play here. And if she's going to fight Paige VanZant, you need to realize that even though Paige VanZant gets a lot of hate from the fans, now I understand she gets a lot of love from people too. It's not like she's not a liked fighter. She is, but it's just that a lot of people also give her flack for her performances in the octagon. But the thing is this, is that I think she, if Macy Barber goes in there and fights Paige VanZant, I'm probably gonna put some money on Paige VanZant, because I think Paige VanZant goes in there. She's more experienced. I think Macy Barber only has like 6 fights in her career. So Paige VanZant's gonna, and Paige VanZant doesn't have that many fights either, but she has more UFC fights, and that's what makes the difference. Macy Barber's most of her fights, she's talking about professional fights and other organizations. It's not the same thing as fighting UFC caliber fighters every time. So, you know, for example, people want to bash Paige VanZant, and I see this all the time. They always bash Paige VanZant because she lost to Rose Namajunas. How is that a way to bash a fighter who lost to a great opponent? Like, losing to Rose Namajunas is not saying a lot. I mean, she's the strawweight champion now. So I don't understand. You know, just like I said earlier, Jacare losing to Whitaker is really not saying a lot. He's the middleweight champion of the world. You know, these are the best fighters in the world in their weight class. But that's what I'm just trying to say. Paige VanZant has been fighting top competition, UFC caliber competition, for a longer time. And Macy Barber is brand new to this rodeo. So she just got to realize what you're getting yourself into. And what you really might do is either get boxed up on the feet by Paige VanZant pretty bad. Either A, that happens, that'd probably be exhibit A, and B would be that you're gonna get twisted up like a pretzel. It's gonna be like a first or second round armbar finish, and fans are gonna be upset. That's what I think. Y'all are gonna be upset if that fight happens.
Well, I saw Macy Barber's first fight in the UFC when she came out to UFC Fight Night Denver. She was very impressive in the fight. You know, then her last fight against J.J. Aldrich, she was taking some shots. J.J. was a game opponent, but J.J. ain't Paige VanZant. And I think a lot of people, my opinion, I think a lot of people don't like Paige VanZant because, number one, she was on Dancing for the Stars, and it kind of like made her a celebrity. And she was basically she was popular for that show, not because she was a fighter, even though she was a UFC fighter. And plus, I think a lot of people don't think she's injury prone because she's always getting hurt. And, you know, once people think that you're injury prone, they're turned off by you. Like Whitaker, I think a lot of people are turned off by him because he's been so hurt and he hasn't really defended his belt. And a lot of people turned off on him because he's injured. And I think a lot of people turned off by Paige because she's injured a lot. She did Dancing with the Stars. She's definitely a very attractive young lady. She really doesn't need the UFC. She probably could go into modeling or stuff like that. She actually calls fights for another organization on the side. So she has opportunities outside of the UFC. And I think a lot of diehard fans, if they see you as a fighter, they want you to be nothing but a fighter, you know. But I think for Barber, I don't know why she would call out Paige, because Barber right now is ranked ahead of Paige. So why wouldn't she call out somebody that's higher ranking than her? But Paige will not be an easy win for Macy Barber. I think Paige VanZant is crafty in the octagon. She does have okay striking. She definitely has game takedown that she can take you down. She does have heart, so it ain't like she's just going to go in there and fold. Losing to Rose Namajunas is not a bad loss. Maybe it's the way she lost. I think she got submitted in that fight. But Rose is a quality opponent, man. She's a champion. She beat the past champion twice. So you can't knock her for losing to Rose Namajunas. But I think if Macy Barber and Paige was a fight, I'm with you. I would probably put money on Paige, and I probably think they would probably hire her as an underdog anyway because of the hype of Macy Barber. And I wouldn't be surprised if Paige finished her. Via submission, though. It would be via submission, not via knockout. I don't see her knocking out Macy. I see her probably submitting her.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll just have to – we'll see what happens. You know, I just think that a lot of people really attacked me on Twitter when I said that I thought Macy Barber would get boxed up by Paige VanZant, but I do think so. I mean, it's not that – and I'm not necessarily saying that Paige has to win by knockout. I'm just saying I think her striking can beat Macy Barber's striking. Barber's striking ain't that good. I mean, she had a second win in the second round. I called it in her Aldridge fight. You know, I won money. I was happy. That's my girl. But at the same time, as you got to realize, Paige VanZant's been striking with better competition. Maisie's been striking with backyard boxing. This ain't backyard boxing. This is the UFC. It's a different game. Guys come from everywhere undefeated, and they get embarrassed in the UFC. Guy come from Bellator, you know, champion. Embarrassed in the UFC. Guy come from, you know, World Series of Fighting. Embarrassed in the UFC. You know, guy come from, you know, this place over there. I know, I can't even think of it off top. Embarrassed in the UFC. What's his name? David Branch. David Branch came. He was a champion at wherever the hell he fought at. He got embarrassed in the UFC. He just actually got David Branch, actually, his last fight, he got wrapped up. He got wrapped up, actually, by Jack Hermanson. It was like, not even 2 minutes.
Yeah,
he got attacked
and
by
David, and David
like
Branch
minutes.
Was a champ, in the World Series of Fighting. He was a champ over there.
That's what I'm trying to say, though, is that like the UFC caliber is different. People make it seem like you know, that's the thing I don't like. People come and like, you know, make fun of fighters. Like, you lose in the UFC, like you're fighting the best guys in the world at this. Like, they're here because they're the best at best. Like, you go over to Bellator. Like, if you had a Bellator card and you put, like, all these Bellator people that, like, people be following and then put them versus the UFC, UFC might sweep Bellator. Like, you know, if you did a champions versus champions UFC Bellator, I'll admit, Bellator has a few guys that are likely to win. You know, and those guys, if I really had a guess off the top of my head, would probably be Bellator's best chance for their champions if they did UFC champions versus Bellator champions. I used to think Rory McDonald, because you had my boy Tyron Woodley as a champion, and Rory McDonald pretty much figured out Woodley's game in their first fight, and you know, it was smooth sailing. He kind of just like ran right through Woodley, but so I was not that confident. Of course, I root for Woodley, but I figured McDonald would win that fight, but against Usman, though, I don't know. I really don't know. Rory McDonald versus Kamaru Usman, I'm not. McDonald would have his hands full. I'm not gonna, especially the way Usman just beat my boy. McDonald's gonna have a problem. So the only champion I really could think from Bellator that would probably win is actually, you have Michael Chandler. I forget what division he's the champion, but Michael Chandler is pretty good. So I know he got the belt again. If you put Michael Chandler's a good wrestler, you probably have him, you know, possibly win his fight. I can't think of who he'd have to fight off the top, but then you have the middleweight champion. You'd have Gegard Mousasi would probably most likely pick up a win, and I think everybody else would get swept. I don't think Ryan Bader will lose. You know, he'd either have to fight John Jones or Cormier. I think he'd lose both those fights. So what do you think about that? I mean, I know I kind of went off topic with it, but my point was just that the UFC caliber is different. People like to downplay the UFC, and then when guys lose, they make fun of them. But you don't realize they're fighting the best MMA fighters in the world.
Um, I think if we had the UFC champs fight the Bellator champs, so your boy Michael Chandler is a lightweight. So lightweight is 155, right?
Yeah, he'd have to fight Khabib. I didn't even realize that. Oh, man.
So, and then you said 205 is who?
Well, 205 and heavyweight in Bellator is Ryan Bader because he's a double champ.
Yeah, well, John Jones already beat Ryan Bader in the UFC. and I doubt if he could beat DC, so I will see him losing. And then Musashi is 170 or 185. Depending on who he was to fight, I would favor him over Whitaker, but I wouldn't favor him over Adesanya. Only reason I will favor him over Whitaker is because we haven't seen Whitaker fight off his back. And I think Musashi will probably take him down and probably make him fight a fight he don't want to fight. Adesanya will keep him at range with his kicks and with his long arms. And I think Adesanya will probably piece him up. But at the same time, Adesanya basically – he took an ass whooping against Kevin Gastelum as far as punishment. So, but I would go Adesanya over Musashi, and I'll take Musashi over Whitaker. And then you say Rory McDonald, he's at 170, right? I would take Usman against him. I think Usman would dominate him on the mat. I don't think Usman want to get in a striking contest against Rory, even though he still has problem with that nose that he had to have surgery on. I think he done had three surgeries on that nose since the Robbie Lawler fight. So I think if you tag him in that nose, that might cause problems for him. But overall, a lot of people just don't understand that when you fighting in your local backyard league and you get a shot in the UFC, that the UFC lights are brighter. The UFC stage is bigger. The UFC crowds are bigger. Everything is done bigger in the UFC than it is in any other organization in mixed martial arts. That's why people strive to get to the UFC. It's just like WWE. A lot of guys that are indie wrestlers, they'll leave where they at a drop of a dime if Vince McMahon said, hey, man, why don't you come and be part of our show? I mean, everybody said Kenny Omega, Cody Rhodes, and the Young Bucks, but everybody outside of them, you know, they will come to the WWE. The UFC, man, is the premier mixed martial arts league organization in the world. And some people can adapt to the bright lights. Some people can't. It's just like throwing the Super Bowl. You know, like when the Patriots, they used to it. A young team like the Rams, they wasn't used to that big stage. You know, all the lights, all the media, all the cameras and all that. And, you know, Tom Brady done went in there like, we've been here before. This ain't nothing for us. But I think normally a person's first fight in the UFC, you normally see the butterflies or you'll see them look a little shook. But probably by the time they second or third fight, they used to it, and you'll probably see the real fighter and they'll come out. Or you'll see them being overrated. You know, guys that come to the UFC undefeated, and then they get in the UFC and they lose three fights. You got to go, buddy. You ain't good enough. And that's how I go.
Yeah, so that's just basically what people need to understand is that when guys come out here and lose, you know, it's a different thing because the UFC is scouting the best guys and the best women fighters on the planet. So, you know, for example,
this weekend at UFC Sunrise, you know, former UFC strawweight champion Carla Esparza is fighting the, well, she was the Invictus strawweight champion. I don't know if she's considered still the champion in that promotion. I mean, she just defended her title, like, the end of 2018, and then got booked for a UFC fight against Carla Esparza, so I don't know if she's even considered active in Invicta's promotion, but, I mean, either way, you have a former strawweight champion versus the strawweight champion of Invicta, and she's 14-0 with, like, I think 11 submissions, so this girl is good. This girl is real good. I can't think of her name off the top of my head. It's in my article that I wrote for the Scrap News. So if you see the underrated fights for UFC Sunrise, the fight, I broke down the fight in the article. So go check that out. If you see it, then you know that's in there. And that is just a situation where it's similar because, you know, 14-0. But, the thing is, though, like, a lot of girls come over here. You know, another one who was an Invicta champion came over here was Megan Anderson. And she was Invicta champion, came over here, and she lost her UFC debut to, I think it was Holly Holm. So that's just an example. Like, just because you're a champion somewhere else and you're undefeated, you know, you come to the UFC and you face, you know, top caliber and you may lose. You know, it's not guaranteed that you'll be undefeated in the UFC. You know, being undefeated in the UFC is a lot different than being undefeated in if you never fought in the UFC. So that's a big reason why I think it's hard for when you consider the GOAT debate in MMA, it's really hard for – I don't really blame people when they rule out fighters who never fought in the UFC as being the GOAT, because if you never fought in the UFC – how do we know you really, like, the level of talent that you really fought? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just hard for me. I mean, me, I don't know, you know, one thing of me is I don't know a lot about, you know, certain guys. I never followed their career. You know, for example, you know, one name comes to mind is Fedor Emelianenko. I don't really know much about Fedor's career. Like, I don't, at that time, you know, I was in and out. I watched UFC, you know, in the Chuck Liddell era. You know, Rampage Jackson in his prime era, like around that time, Rich Franklin era, like I knew about the fighters. I was watching the UFC when BJ Penn, you know, was in his prime. He was still like the guy to pick on UFC Undisputed video game, you know, like Shogun Hua when he was still, you know, one of the best fighters in the world. Like I knew UFC then and then kind of lost out for some years and then come back. You know, I really didn't know about Fedor. And one of the reasons I didn't know him, because he wasn't in the UFC. Like, I mean, guys, I didn't know what Strikeforce was. I didn't know about these other promotions. I just knew about the UFC. And that's a big reason why I mainly watch the UFC today. You know, I might check out a Bellator event. You know, I might watch a lot of, you know, I do watch a lot of fights on YouTube from other promotions, you know, smaller level promotions. Like I said, I might check out a Bellator event once in a while if you know, the fight card intrigues me or certain guys fight him. But my point being, just going back to it, is if you're not in the UFC, it's just hard for people to – I can see why it's hard for people to think of you in the GOAT debate, because how do we know you really fought the best guys?
Yeah, because, you know, I think with Fedor – you know, back then, the heavyweight division, it was kind of lacking. And I think he was in Pride, and then he moved over to Bellator. Then he was in Strikeforce. And basically, I could never respect his record because he didn't do it against the best guys. The UFC is universally recognized as having the best fighters in the world. And when his contract was up with Strikeforce, Brock Lesnar was the champ in UFC. And Dana White went out of his way to try to sign Fedor to a deal. At first, he offered him a 5-fight deal. And then he even lowered it down to a three-fight deal. And Fedor turned it down. So to me, that he's not the GOAT in my book because he didn't find the best promotion. And then when he came back, he could have fought in the UFC once again. And he turned it down to go to Bellator. So, you know, I really can't say he the GOAT. I think the GOAT conversation is always based on who you like. You know, I think it's all is an opinionated thing, and it's an emotional thing. Some people let their emotions drive, you know, what their decision going to be. Case in point is John Jones. A lot of people hate John Jones because of the steroids thing, because of the cocaine thing, because of the hit and run thing he had. You know, he carries himself as an arrogant guy. But people never look at his skills. His skill set is probably top five of all time in mixed martial arts history. But if you like him, you like him. If you don't, you don't. So you'll find a reason why to not hire him as your GOAT or not your top 10 or top five or not your pound for pound. And it's just a popularity. I mean, it's an opinionated thing and it's a popularity thing. But, you know, if you haven't fought in the UFC, I really can't take you seriously. And I think when me and you first started doing our show, you had brought up Ben Askren way back then, and I was like, well, I don't know nothing about the guy. All I know is that Dana White said he ain't signed him because he got a boring fighting style. That was good enough for me. So if you can't make it in the UFC, then, you know, I really don't follow you. I mean, it was a few guys in Strikeforce and WEC I knew about, but WEC ended up, you know, being swallowed up by Strikeforce, and then Strikeforce ended up getting swallowed up by the UFC. But it was a couple guys you had heard of back in WEC and Strikeforce. You know, you had the Diaz brothers down there. You had Uriah Faber down there. You had Dominique Cruz down there at one time. You know, you had a lot of guys down there, Gilbert Melendez, Showtime Pettis, Benson Henderson. You know, you had a lot of guys down there that were names, but they wasn't at the optimal level of competition until they came in the UFC. And Gilbert Melendez is another guy. If you look at him, he had a lot of hype coming up from Strikeforce. He got in the UFC, and I think he has a losing record in the UFC. The dude that came from Bellator, I can't think of his name right now, he came to the UFC with a lot of hype, lost his first three fights, and he gone. It's just a step up in competition. And if you're not ready, you'll get exposed. And a lot of guys that got exposed.
I know who you're talking about with the guy. I think I know the guy who came from Bellator, lost his first three fights. Hector Lombard?
Hector Lombard was one, but it was another guy, a black guy. I can't think of his name. And I think he went back to Bellator. I can't think of his name, but I'm going to look it up.
Oh, man, yeah. Actually, yeah, you want the real statistic, actually. Yeah, Hector Lombard. Wow, yeah, Hector Lombard really, he went one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Hector Lombard went like 8-0 in Bellator. And then he came to the UFC. He lost his first fight. Then he won one. Then he lost one. Then he won two. He went 2-3. And then he lost six fights in a row.
Lorenz Larkin. That's the guy I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Him too. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Lorenz Larkin too. Yeah, that guy. And he, I'm pretty sure he's losing a... He's been losing in Bellator, too. But, Yeah, so Hector Lombard, like, went on a streak in the Bellator, and then he come to UFC and pretty much lost, like, 80% of his fights. So this guy, yeah, he went 3-8. He, in his 11 UFC fights, Hector Lombard is 3-8. And in his last 6 fights, he's been stopped. He's been stopped in 3 of his last 6 fights. He's been knocked out. So that's not good. But he's fighting top guys.
A lot of people attribute his losses to him that once USADA came in effect, a lot of people say that's when he started taking losses.
Well, that seemed to be the case for a lot of fighters. You know, Johnny Hendricks started losing after USADA came into effect too. Right once USADA came in, he went like 1-7 or something like that in his next like 8 fights. A lot of guys started looking suspect once USADA came in. You know, some people say that about Frank Mir too. Because Frank Mir hasn't looked the same in a long time, and I don't even know why he's still fighting, but probably should have retired by now.
Yeah, man.
Frank Mir was like one of the best guys when I was younger watching the UFC. Frank Mir was like one of the best fighters there was.
But the thing about Frank Mir was he could never take a punch. Once he got you down, he was probably one of the best heavyweights with a ground game, but he just could never take a punch.
And that's a really interesting thing because when you're in the heavyweight division, you kind of have to be able to take a couple of shots. I mean, guys can get knocked out with one shot, but you kind of have to have a little bit of a chin like Stipe. Like Stipe had a chin. You know, he took, you know, some of Francis Ngannou's best shots, and he didn't go down. You know, if he didn't have a chin, he would have gotten knocked out by Ngannou in the first round. But Stipe, see, that's what you – it's amazing for heavyweights to have, like Frank Mir to be able to have such a ground game. You never even see heavyweights with a ground game anymore.
Nope.
You know, besides having wrestling, you never really see heavyweights winning by submission. Besides, Stefan Struve comes to mind. Stefan Struve, you know, by submission in heavyweight division. And then Cormier, you know, he had a submission win. But he's just really getting into the heavyweight division. Stefan Struve has like 8 wins by submission or something like that in the heavyweight division. So, and then he's a really big guy.
Yeah, he retired now, though.
Did he officially retire?
Yeah, he retired after his last fight. You know, he had a heart condition that actually put his life in jeopardy. And he had took, I want to say, maybe like 10 months to a year off to get his health back right. And then he came back. And then I want to say he fought on the Blachowicz card. And he retired after that.
Yeah, and he had a pretty good win, too. It's always good to see a fighter go out on a win.
Yeah, because something that surprised me earlier this week was when I saw Eddie Wineland was still fighting. I was like, I thought Eddie Wineland had gave it up. Eddie Wineland still fighting? So,
yeah,
that was a shock.
I haven't heard of him in a couple of years. I haven't heard of Eddie Wineland in a couple of years at least. That's crazy. But, you know, man, we definitely got through a ton of stuff in this show. And, you know, UFC Sunrise is going to be great. And, you know, we're going to keep going. Hopefully keep going on, you know, Wednesdays is pretty much becoming our official day for Lee and Keys Real Talk. You know, it only took us 96 episodes to... to lock in this, you know, a solidified day of the week. But, speaking of which, episode 96, you know, I want to make a shout-out in this episode. Episode 96. Usually Lee does the shout-outs for the numbers, but, you know, this one is perfect for me because
I just want to shout out myself, and I'm going to tell you why. Because I was actually born in 1996. So 96, right when I wrote this up earlier, I was like, damn, 96, it's all me, baby. 96 is a lucky year. But, yeah, I just want to shout out to Keys. You a real one, bro. Keep grinding.
Okay. So, we don't have no shout out tonight, man. Me and my man Keys, you know, we write for the Scrap News. Check us out on Twitter. Check out our articles. I think we've been bringing the fire with those, just like we've been bringing the fire with our podcast. You know, that's another platform for us to do something that we really like. And, you know, that's spreading UFC love and, you know, putting pen to paper. So, I'm working on mine now. Should be done by tomorrow. Hopefully I have it posted by Friday before the fight Saturday. I should have had it done today, but I was kind of busy today. But, episode 96, Lynn Keys Real Talk. Everybody have a good evening. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. Love, live, laugh. Peace.